Most people go to the same old job every day, doing the same things every day, barely getting by. But it doesn't have to be that way. This is the real path to BYOB. Be your own boss. Change your life through real estate. On this show, we'll have interviews and inspiration from people who've made it, bringing you real-life stories to help you chart your own path to BYOB. This is the real path to BYOB. Be your own boss. And now, here's your host, Mun Sachapuri.
Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of The Real Path to Be Your Own Boss, the show that aims to inspire you to achieve financial freedom and be your own boss. This is your host, Mun Sachapuri, and our guest for today's episode is Lane Kawayoka. Lane Kawayoka owns 4,200 plus rental units and is a leader of a club which has acquired over $350 million of real estate by syndicating over $40 million of private equity since 2016. He has obtained his BS in Industrial Engineering and MS in Civil Engineering and Construction Management from the University of Washington. Lane uses his engineering degree to reverse engineering the wealth building strategies that the rich use in his top 50 investing podcast called SimplePassiveCashflow.com. Welcome to the show, Lane. So great to have you here.
Hey, thanks for having
me. Do you want to share anything else about you that I missed in your bio?
No. I mean, it's kind of pretty large portfolio these days, but it didn't always start there, right? I mean, kind of always starts with that first property.
I want to hear more about that. Like, could you share with us more from the days when you started getting intrigued about real estate and how you first got started? And then when was the time that you decided to go in full time and make the career switch?
Yeah, so I think we have similar backgrounds, right? We're all taught to go to school, study hard, work at a job for 40, 50 years. Mm-hmm. Along the way, buy a house to live in, which I don't necessarily think is good financial advice. But I graduated with an industrial engineering degree up in Seattle. Then I went to work for a couple of years, saved my money, and bought a house to live in. But because I was working on the road all the time, I decided to rent it out and to a young 20-something-year-old kid back in 2009, that was a lot of beer money, right? $2,200 a month for the rent, and the PITI, the mortgage payment, was $1,600. So I realized, like, wow, if I just do this a few more times, I'll be able to quit my day job eventually. So that all my focus and energy went into, like, you know, saving more money to buy more properties. That was kind of the start of it all.
Okay. So this was back in Seattle when you had just graduated and you were working right after, out of college, or?
Yeah. So my claim to fame back then was I was a really frugal, right? I grew up in a very frugal household. I was able to save maybe 40 to 60 grand a year to put two down payments for property.
Wow, that's amazing. That's definitely like some tip that, you know, everyone can learn to start saving early on, because the earlier you start investing in real estate, the better it is, right? Because it appreciates over time and all the good stuff that comes with it.
Yeah, that's great. At the end of the day, it's very simple, right? It's how much money you're able to net to put to investments that grow for you.
Right.
Very simple equation.
Right. So how did that play out after, like, so you bought that property and you bought a few more while you were still working? And when like, how did that transition over the years into, like?
Yeah, it took a while. I didn't quit my job until a few years ago, because my job was super easy and I found easier jobs to hide. So, but going back, I bought that first property in Seattle. I bought a duplex after that. But I realized that a lot of sophisticated investors do not buy for appreciation. Like, so they don't invest in places like California, Seattle, Hawaii. They go to more of these, like, secondary and tertiary markets. So the third property I bought was out in Birmingham, Alabama.
Okay.
Which I still think is a great way for people to get started. It's mm-hmm. kind of like a rental property with training wheels, essentially. So I bought that, and then I realized, wow, I can get 1% rent-to-value ratio properties, and I went all in on that. And around 2015, I had 11 of those rental properties. A few hundred bucks of cash flow each wasn't bad, you know, $3,000 mm-hmm. a month. Some months not so good, some better than the other. But realized that that single-family homes wasn't quite scalable. So I kind of transitioned more to vacation investing, private placements, and apartments after 2015.
Got it. So you, while working full-time, you invested out of state in Turkey?
Yeah. So the first few of them were in-state in Seattle, where I could feel it, touch it, right? Which I think a lot of people, they need to have that to feel comfortable. But most of us that have good salaries don't live in places where it's good to buy rental properties.
So you invested first in Seattle, and then you got comfortable, and then you switched out of state.
That's correct, yeah.
How did that work out? Like, did you have a reliable property manager? Like, it's a little hard to manage out-of-state properties, right, when you have a full-time job.
Yeah. If you're one of those people who needs to micromanage everything, you're exactly right. But you got to kind of act more like an investor, not a landlord. And you need to empower your property managers to kind of be your extension and trust them, but also verify that they're getting the best pricing, vendors, and repairs. So, yeah, a lot of these properties I bought without even seeing the damn thing.
Wow.
You know, you go off numbers, right? And you're buying commodities. You're buying commodities, $100,000 boxes that rent for $1,000 a month. And you have a third-person property manager running for you.
And you never really had to fly in there either for any issues?
I mean, I did eventually, you know, as I bought more, but it's not necessary. Right?
Okay.
Makes people's head explode, but.
Got it. So from there on, you transition into syndications and multifamily space?
Right. I mean, with the turnkey rentals, I mean, you're making a few hundred bucks of cash flow every property.
Mm-hmm.
But with 11 properties, you know, $3,000 a month, you know, you're going to need 30 of these properties to get $10,000.
Right.
I don't know what American family can survive off $3,000 passive cash flow a month. But with 11 properties, just to give people a sample size, I was having an eviction maybe every once or twice a year.
Mm-hmm.
And some kind of big catastrophe that happened every quarter, such as like a tree falling on the house or maybe like a storm, right? We have a lot of winter storms right now
that
cause some damage, which is no problem because the property manager takes care of a lot of this headaches. That's their job. But your job as the asset manager is to make sure they get it done in time. Not gouging you on repairs. But for 30 houses, you're going to have an eviction every other month. Some kind of big catastrophe every couple of weeks, right? Just by the few numbers. This is about the time where I started to join different masterminds and getting around other higher accredited investors.
Mm-hmm.
And they all were kind of saying the same thing. You know, investing in private placement syndications where they're diversifying over different asset classes, different partners, different geographic areas. And they don't do anything. They just throw in 50 grand and they're passive LP limited partners.
Okay. So is that what you do now? Like, what's your primary focus right now?
So that's what I initially did, you know, jump into LP, right? Mm-hmm. But then I eventually got more involved in running the deal and got more on the general partnership side. So now I operate apartment offerings for people within my private network. And just kind of pick up cash flow that are stabilized assets to get the nice Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac non-recourse debt with a little bit of value add while trying to bump the rents up. That's the business plan.
Awesome. That's the Class B and Class C properties, I assume, in multifamily.
Yeah, a little less classy these days, right? We've tried to sell some of them off this past year because they're kind of a little bit of a headache.
Right.
Collections is a little bit difficult with those guys.
Right.
Kind of heading more towards the B and the low A's.
Are you focused on any other asset classes?
I operate apartments, so I kind of stick to what I'm good at, but I okay. also will invest outside of apartments, but not be the hands-on operator. So
oh, okay.
office Got space, it. Mobile home parks, looking into industrial.
Too, Got it.
But more as like a hands-off investor type of stuff.
Okay, awesome. So you have a degree in civil engineering and construction management, right? Has that been really helpful for you in this path?
It has, as we're starting to do some development deals now.
Awesome.
And it's really, really eerily familiar to what I used to do in the day job. As I mentioned in the pre-call, I wasn't a very good engineer. Right? Like, I have industrial and civil degrees, but I was never the, I can't design anything. I was the guy who could never get the problems right in college. So what did I become in real life? But a project manager, because you don't need to know how to do anything. You just manage the project and you hire consultants, the experts, the smart people to do it for you. So that's how these construction jobs are done, right? Like I go hire a civil engineer, do a competitive bidding process. But now it's so easy because I can just pick whoever I want. I don't have to follow no government, mandate, a selective bidding process that takes us months to do, and it's a waste of money. I don't have to follow some company policy or anything like that. I can just pick whoever I want because I'm the owner, and at the end of the day, I'm gonna pick who's the best provider at the best cost, and then I'm gonna go hire a construction manager and then a contractor.
The perks of being your own boss, right? You get to call the shots.
Yeah, I mean, I think for a lot of us who do a lot of contracts, right, hire consultants, contractors, that's the bane of your existence. And I think if you're probably listening to this podcast, you probably are one of the drivers and you're like, yeah, I want more in life. And you probably get really frustrated with all that stuff, right? You have to follow these silly rules that ultimately just slow you down.
Yeah.
That somebody else did something in the past and, maybe got kickbacks from certain contractors or whatever, and you're the one paying the price now because it bogs you down.
Right. So shifting cracks a little bit, which markets are you primarily focused on in the U.S.?
Well, red states, right? Because obviously they're just more economically driven.
Mm-hmm.
We want the landlord laws on our side. And then, population growth, job growth, I don't know what really leads the other, but I mainly look at rent increases per year in the past. And there's got to be a story nearby. So a lot of the markets that I like are like Arizona, Texas, Georgia, Alabama, Florida.
Got it.
A lot of that Sunbelt. You hear this again and again and again. I mean, I'll take those five states over the other 45 any day. But then, of course, you're looking at like what submarket you're investing in.
Mm-hmm.
So a submarket. In Houston, for example, a large MSA, you're going to have probably a few dozen submarkets, right? And then even in every submarket, you got to walk the property. You got to make sure it's got a good vibe going on.
Right. Okay. Talk a little bit about the counterintuitive wealth strategies that the wealthy follow that, you share on your podcast and also on your website, I believe.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think the big one that, they kind of teach us is like the accumulation theory where you build up this chunk of money, $2 to $4 million, and you live off the rest. Most people building their wealth are living off a cash flow strategy. Like that's what I do, right? Like to go and buy assets, whether it be a syndication deal or a rental property, you're essentially creating a mini pension for yourself today. Because most of us who are listening have day jobs, right? That's putting food on the table. Whatever money that property is kicking off is gravy. So, which can help you go buy more and more mini streams of income. So I think that's one very counterintuitive thing that the wealthy do to kind of grow their money. And then, of course, I don't really believe in retirement accounts. I don't necessarily think that's a wise idea for people good with their money to buy a house to live in. And I definitely agree that for most people it is, because most people aren't not financially responsible with their money. They have $500 laying around, they're going to spend it.
Hmm.
So maybe they should go buy a house to live in because it's a for savings account.
Mm-hmm.
But for other people, I mean, do the math on your own, guys, right? Like, what's going to make you a higher return?
So is that saying, like, don't buy an expensive home, but buy a decent one and invest the rest in rentals? Is that right?
I live by the invest in rentals and syndications, right? Grow your money.
Uh-huh.
And go rent a bigger, nicer place than you would have otherwise.
But
at the end of the day, make sure that the arbitrage is better in your favor, right?
Okay.
So I mean, maybe in the beginning when I was in my 20s, I would have done that.
Mm-hmm.
But today I kind of live for more like fat, I call it fat FI, you know, like the FI movement, the FIRE movement.
Uh-huh,
there's
different
flavors of FI. There's the lean FI who never have a Starbucks latte and are super cheap and frugal. But then there's the fat ones, right? Spend money on quality, right? At some point, time is more valuable than money. And you've made the hard decisions that most people do not make. And therefore, you deserve to go blow your money on some fun things.
Awesome. Also, could you talk a little bit about your ideas about passive cash flow investing?
Passive cash flow investing, I mean, turnkey rentals is the way I kind of recommend most people get started, especially if your net worth is under $250,000, $500,000.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I did in my 20s. But once you get up to a certain amount, you know, you kind of start to do more privates and placements and syndications where you're not the operator anymore. You have a general partner who kind of takes over that.
Okay.
Turnkey rentals, yeah, they're called turnkey, but they're definitely not completely passive. If you want completely passive, you go buy, you know, you go into syndications and private placements.
So why do you recommend someone start off with turnkey and like, you know, the single family versus like passively investing? Why is that?
I mean, most passive investing operators, they don't want to mess around with non-accredited investors because it's just takes so much effort to educate them. Non-accredited investors are very whiny, right? Because it's a lot of money to them. Most of the minimum investments are 50 grand.
Yeah,
you're makes
right.
No sense to take in smaller level investors only to have them complain 6 months. It just, and once they put in money into a few deals, they blew their load. They don't got no money to invest more.
Right.
But yeah, you got to get your net worth up to a certain point, I think. And part of being a passive investor is your network is your network. You have to start getting around other accredited investors to figure out who to work with, right? What are the insider events going on in the industry? Unless your net worth is $1 million or more, it's hard to really interact, unfortunately, right?
Right.
Country club.
Yeah. So you're saying only if you have a net worth of $1 million, it kind of makes sense to stop passively investing in like other deals till that point,
yeah,
just grow your own turnkeys.
Yeah, I would say like under $500,000, just stick with single family homes, doing it on your own, right? Like I have a kind of a rule where I tell a lot of people, like, don't invest more than 5 to 10% of their net worth into one deal.
Hmm.
You want to be diversified.
Okay. So you mentioned you started off, or like after the single family, you start passively investing, right? For how long did you do that?
From 2009, I bought my first rental property. The last one I bought was in 2015. So
okay.
It took me like 6 years. And at that point, I think my net worth was like around definitely over $500,000.
Okay.
At that point. But I mean, it just goes to show like I was accelerating pretty quickly because I was able to save so much money.
Uh-huh.
But it still took more than half a decade
right.
to get up to that level.
Right.
I think that's what's frustrating for a lot of people to get to $100,000 net worth, $200,000. It takes so much energy and time.
Yeah. Unless you're in super appreciating markets, even then it takes time. Yeah, you just have to let the market play out.
So I don't know. I tell a lot of investors, like, look, like you might be investing in appreciation for now, but you never know, right? Easy come, easy go. If things are easy, I wouldn't want to be in it first. Like that's why I like commercial real estate, because when you force appreciate the asset, it's you doing it.
Right.
And in the end, like, wealth comes to those people who create value for others, not mm-hmm. traders who buy those so high. Those are guys who are just simply getting lucky. True wealth comes to those who, for example, force appreciate assets and they get better communities, better living conditions for people
mm-hmm.
who in turn pay you higher rents.
Mm-hmm.
That is reliable. That is what's going to build true wealth.
Yeah, I love that. I love how you think about that. That's such a great idea. You're improving communities as well, and you're actually forcing the appreciation so that you can benefit yourself and the investors. So it's like such a double-ended reward.
Yeah. I mean, just people like to invest in Bitcoin or all these other things or Tesla stock, but it's like, what are you doing that somebody else can't do, right? You're not doing anything. You're not creating any value.
Yeah. I mean, investing in stocks and bitcoins, it's just market driven, not very predictable is my take on it. Personally, I try to stay away from that, but yeah. It works for others who don't have time or, you know, who just, not my thing though.
Yeah. Not my thing either.
Okay. Okay.
I don't have any paper assets.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. I tried it and didn't work for me. And now I stay away from it. I like real assets. Real estate feels like a much more safer, predictable investment strategy for me.
Right. Right. Like if somebody tweets something or Lululemon president says something dumb, the stock comes down, like that makes absolutely no sense.
Exactly. Right. Right. Yeah. All right. So you had quite a long time doing like single families and then passively investing and now actively managing real estate, right? So throughout all these years, can you share with us what was like some of the biggest mistakes that you had in any learnings that came along with that?
I mean, this is going to sound really lame, but there's not really too many mistakes when you invest in cash flow, right? It's super boring. You're not going to see the show on HGTV because it's too long. And it's going to be boring. You know what the outcome is going to be. But if I can look back, a couple of mistakes, you know, in the beginning, I paid down debt. That's silly. Why would you want to pay down good debt? That definitely slowed down my progress.
You could have used the money elsewhere, right? To buy another property, right? Right.
Exactly. Exactly. And who knows what that would be worth today. The one big thing is, yeah, when I started investing in syndications, you know, investing with the wrong people, I invested in one deal where a guy just ran off with my money, essentially. But that's, you know, how do you mitigate that? Well, you've got to build up your network of other pure passive investors to know, you know, their dirt on people out there. Don't invest in until you know somebody who's actually invested with somebody else and has had a good experience. Now, granted, you're not going to have that when you get started.
Mm-hmm.
You got to kind of build up some, you know, good things and bad things so you can build up said relationships with peer passive investors. But yeah, I mean, hopefully, you know, people can take my lessons and not make the same mistakes.
So for someone who wants to start out in commercial real estate with passive investing, you suggest that they should really focus on building their network and finding the deal sponsor from other passive investors.
Right, right.
So what are resources for the purely passive investors? How do they?
I don't know where to go, but I do know like some places not to go, or like the local RIA or free internet sites forums, because most times you're interacting with people coming in real estate who don't have money and they're just trying to get rich via wholesaling or flipping houses and stuff like that.
Okay. So okay.
If you're looking to passively invest, that is a couple places definitely not to go. But other than that, I don't know how to help folks.
I don't know. Maybe that's a great idea that you just started off there, that the purely passive folks need a place that they can reliably learn from and get reliably connected with the right sponsors and, you know, the other passive investor networks who's willing to share their knowledge and experience.
I do have a free Facebook group for mainly passive investors.
Okay.
But I think investors need to kind of reach out and build organic relationships, right?
Mm-hmm.
Be a giver, don't be a taker.
But the idea of being passive is because they don't have time, right? It's because they are busy with their demanding careers. So it's very counterintuitive that for them to like come in and then like learn and then interact and connect with other investors. So it's tricky, like how to manage the balance there.
Right, right. But in anything, there's a minimum effective dose. So if you interact with the right people, and it's not going to take overnight, it's not going to, you know, it may take several years to start to build up your network. But, you know, it's like swimming, you know, look at the good swimmers out there. They go super fast, but they use very little energy. Or if you take me, I'm thrashing around the water, but drown if I swim more than 5 minutes. So figuring out what to do and what is the minimum effective dose. I mean, if you're passively investing and you have a full-time day job, which most of my clients have, and you're spending more than 4 to 5 hours a month going to your knowledge learning and networking, you're doing it the wrong way. Absolutely doing it the wrong way.
What's the right way?
Meeting with the right people, reading the right stuff, right? Not going to the dumpster dive of noise out there that don't apply the high net worth passive investors.
Got it. Okay. So go to the
Which is kind of frustrating, right? Because, all right, Lane, you know, tell me this, but I'm really busy. And it's like, look, I'm telling you, it doesn't take too much time and energy to do this if you do it the right way. But if you just want to give up, and go work your day job that you potentially, you may or may not like, and we know what's going to happen if you keep doing that. You're just going to go work at that job for 40, 50 years. You might have enough to retire. But I've done it in 10 years or less. I made a lot of mistakes along the way. I had to build up from scratch. I mean, today I can kind of help people get there a lot faster. But it's going to require people to get out of their comfort zone and put a little bit of effort in the right places to get to this lifestyle where you go FI. The world is your oyster. Kind of do what you want.
Got it. So what are the resources you're recommending? You mentioned where passive investors should not go, and you said 4 to 5 hours per month doesn't work. So what works and where should they go?
I would say check out my website, my podcast. It's all free, right? Don't pay for anything. Check it out. Just learn. If you're new to rental real estate, check out my guide on turnkey rentals, simplepassivecashflow.com/turnkey. If you're high net worth, simplepassivecashflow.com/vacation.
Got it.
That's what I've kind of created to kind of filter the right people into our community.
Got it. And for passive investors, it's just one-time learning. They don't even need to like dig deep like active investors. So I think once they get a hang of it, it just they could keep investing with that knowledge. So it's much easier. So makes
right,
sense.
Right.
Awesome. Moving on to the next question, like share with us one of your recent biggest and proudest moment of success.
So we just exited 3 deals where we doubled investors' money in 3 years or less.
Wow. Congratulations.
Part of that, I like to say, was because hard work and determination. But part of it was we invested in the right places and we conservatively underwrote to exceed targets.
Okay. And
I think it's really cool that we did that because at one time I thought everybody should go buy turnkey rentals, right? To me, I did it before. And I was not very self-aware to the fact that for a new person, it's very daunting, right? To go find a property manager out of state.
Right.
Today, I realized that that's not for everybody. So to kind of open up the world of syndication and private placement where you can truly be 100% passive, just got to do your due diligence in the front or take a few chances to eventually find somebody good to work with for a lifetime.
Right.
That's really really opens it up to a lot more people. Kind of my mission is to help hardworking professionals pay their fair share of taxes and then some, and definitely make their fair share of contributions to the world in terms of output. I mean, these are the people that are like need this stuff the most, I think.
Yeah. Awesome. So you mentioned you doubled the money in 3 years. How's your business plan typically structured? Is it for 5 years or 3 years.
Yeah, I mean, normally the business plan is to rehab units, right? Which if people own rental property, they understand that people naturally turn over. So in 2.5 years, you're going to go through most of the units. We don't kick out tenants. We want to kind of try to optimize for as much cash flow as we can. So not until tenants naturally move out is when we turn the units and rehab it. So this is, think of it like a slow flip. I mean, the first 3 years, we try and get it all done. And at that point, we try and reposition to sell. And there's also some time that you have to restabilize the P&Ls for the next buyer to buy it. But yeah, anywhere from 3 to 7 years is kind of the holds.
Going to the next one, like, who have been the most influential people to you in this path?
Not really. I mean, I just, a whole bunch of other pure passive investors, a bunch of no-names that worked engineering jobs that were the same thing like me, just maybe 10, 20 years older than me. I mean, those are the most influential people. Those are the real people, the real heroes out there.
Do you work with some of them now?
No, I don't know where they went. They just happened to help me out along the way. And I think that in this world, in this real estate investor world, there's a lot of people like that. And it makes sense why, because they don't have anything better to do. And at some point, everybody kind of wants to give back in their own way.
Right.
But yeah. I mean, there's a lot of fake gurus out there, especially in real estate world. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Awesome. Finally, like, since my show is focused on like financial freedom and being your own boss, what do those terms mean to you?
Financial freedom gives you options, right? It's money's not everything, but it sure makes life a lot easier.
Sure.
And it gives you the option to, I mean, just imagine if you had all the money in the world, or not really a big chunk of money, but if you had $10,000, $20,000, $30,000 coming in every single month in prudent hard assets, such as real estate, workforce housing, real estate, that will, I mean, just think what you would do, right? You would do what you want, where you want, whom you want, terms.
Thank you so much, Lane, for being on our show today. I truly appreciate you sharing your insights. Is there anything else you want to share?
No, thanks to everybody for having me. Yeah, get started. Buy, you know, get, whether it's a buying a rental or, just, or learning, just get going, because this stuff works. It's not a get rich quick thing, but it truly is a get rich for sure thing.
Awesome. Get rich for sure. That can be a tagline.
Yeah.
Awesome. Where can folks connect with you?
They can go to my website, simplepassivecashflow.com. And then if they want to go check out my podcast, Simple Passive Cashflow, Passive Real Estate Investing, iTunes, Google Play, etc.
You've been listening to The Real Path to BYOB, Be Your Own Boss. The 9-to-5, busting your hump for someone else, barely scraping by. With this show, that ends. We hope you've gotten some useful and practical information from this show. And we hope we've helped inspire and give you strategies to maximize your passive wealth through real estate. We'll be back soon. But in the meantime, hook up with us on Instagram at Silicon Hills Capital Group and sign up on our webpage at SiliconHillsCapitalGroup.com to be notified about upcoming webinars and get a copy of the monthly newsletter. You're on track with The Real Path to BYOB. Be your own boss.